Hello and very warm welcome to the first episode of Gandhara Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's brand new show focusing on Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host in Washington, D.C., with my colleague Abu Bakr Siddiq in Prague, who's the editor of Gandhara's website. This is Gandhara's first episode, which we hope to be a bi-weekly podcast to discuss the most pressing issues relevant to Pakistan and Afghanistan from the local and regional perspective. And the topic of our first episode could not be more urgent and consequential, which is the likely Trump effect on U.S.'s strategy towards Pakistan, especially Afghanistan, which was barely mentioned during the entire election campaign. Afghanistan, where U.S. is engaged in its longest war against terror, remain depend on U.S.'s financial aid and military support to survive. Additionally, in the face of its fragile and somewhat dysfunctional government, the next step U.S. takes could not be more consequential. Also, relations between Pakistan and India is in crisis. These days, their armies regularly trade shots along the line of control, I should say, sometimes with severe consequences. Moreover, Pakistan is faced with its own insurgent political and economic problems. Now, what the new U.S. administration does or don't, both will have long-lasting consequences. In today's show, in the absence of a definitive AFPAC strategy, we will discuss what the election of Trump means to the United States' engagement in the region. What are the challenges and what are his options to handle those crises? To discuss all this, I'm joined by a distinguished panel of experts in the know. Michael Kugelman, the senior South Asia fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center, is joining me from Washington, D.C. to reflect thinking in the new administration. Michael, welcome to the Gandhara podcast.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. Thomas Rutik, co-founder of the Afghan Analysis Network, is with us to explain some of the challenges and its peculiarities from Afghan perspective. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Abu Bakr Siddiq, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website focusing on Pakistan and Afghanistan, is joining us from Prague to explain how things look like from his home country of Pakistan. Abu Bakr, welcome to Gandhara.
Thank you for having me.
Gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining the Gandhara debate today. And let me start with you, Michael. As President-elect Trump is taking office in January, among others, he will be given a tick folder marked as a AFPAC. Take us through that file. What's in there waiting for Mr. Trump?
Well, yeah, you're right. Let's hope that it's a very large file, because this is a president-elect who is given really no indication at all that he understands Afghanistan and much less understands U.S. policy there and what it needs to be. And I would argue that on many levels, President-elect Trump is really going to continue with the current U.S. policy on Afghanistan. So in that sense, you know, when he gets this large folder, I imagine it may highlight what's been done by the Obama administration with some discussion on you know, the U.S. troop level policy. President-elect Trump has essentially endorsed the current troop plan, though what I would think and really what I would assume is that Trump will be much less patient than President Obama, and certainly much less patience than would have been a President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, about the notion of an open-ended commitment to U.S. troops in Afghanistan. I mean, Trump has said that he does not want a nation build when it comes to a U.S. military presence in Afghanistan, which suggests that he would not want to look to an open-ended commitment. But, you know, I think at this point, in terms of what will be in that briefing folder, I'd like to hope it'll just be some very basic things, not just about the security situation, but also about the significant instability of the government in Afghanistan. I think that Trump needs to learn a lot about the fact that it's not just the security situation that's troubling, but also the fact that the national unity government is quite ineffective and dysfunctional, and that could pose a big challenge for him right off the bat.
Thomas, what are some of his immediate challenges, the way it's seen from Afghanistan?
Well, Afghanistan is facing a triple crisis. Michael has already alluded to it. It's not only about the security situation, it is also about the stalemate within the national unity government in Afghanistan, which in the moment is just facing a new crisis with parliament throwing out minister after minister, six by today, and it's possibly continuing. And first of all, I would even say it's the socioeconomic situation in Afghanistan. So Afghanistan is highly dependent on development aid, on military aid. Most of that's coming from the West. Most of it in the West comes from the US. We don't have many statements on Afghanistan by president-elect, but we have a couple of tweets he has been sending out a couple of years ago where he says, okay, troops should go out. Afghans hate us. We train them and they kill us. We had the attack on Bagram just on Saturday, which gives them some proof, so to say. Afghanistan cannot pay its own bills. There were a couple of very big silver bullets like mining and so on, which have been proposed that could add to Afghanistan's budget. But probably that takes a long time and will go on longer than even the Trump presidency.
Right. Abu Bakr, talking about the nuclear state of Pakistan, which is not in good terms with both of its neighbors, India and Afghanistan, and is often accused of harboring militants. What do you see as immediate situation that Trump administration will likely to deal in Pakistan?
Well, if we go by what he said during the campaign, I think it was in April or late April that he gave an interview to Fox in which he kind of said something about Pakistan. One of the key things he said was that he wants to free this doctor, Dr. Shakil Afridi, who's serving a sentence in Pakistan. He was originally arrested for aiding the CIA in hunting down Osama bin Laden. And he also said, very interestingly, that Trump said that he would like to keep at least 10,000 troops in Afghanistan because of its next door neighbor, Pakistan. And he also kind of questioned the whole rationale of giving aid to Pakistan. But these are all campaign, it was kind of campaign rhetoric. So what really we need to watch for is the key appointments. And in relations to Pakistan and Afghanistan, the national security, his national security advisor and the Secretary of State will kind of tell us which direction he is going. I mean, I can sense that there is a lot of hype in India of Trump being a great friend of India and a great friend of the current Indian Prime Minister. But I think it's still too early. I think
Abu Bakr, those expectations or the desire, let's say, from the Indian side is coming from one of the Trump speeches given during the campaign. I believe in the Indian festival of Diwali, he was with the Hindu community here and spoke really clearly about how he envisions U.S. is working with India in terms of security intelligence sharing. So those comments or aspirations from Indian side are coming from that, I believe.
Yeah, indeed. And also some of the things that also I think are said or debated in India, I think a lot of Indians see in him as a kind of a reflection of their own Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who is kind of a populist leader. But I think in terms of policy and what direction his administration will take, it's too early. I just want to briefly mention that Pakistan is already trying to put out its own message. Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has been very quick in congratulating President-elect Trump. And I think there is a realization in Pakistan. Pakistan has also put out last week a very important message in terms of Haqqani Network, this strong military arm of the Taliban, being in Afghanistan. So in a sense, Pakistan is saying that they are not supporting any of the militants or some of the most lethal or potent militant groups active in Afghanistan.
Michael, what are the signs we should look for in terms of what direction the President-elect Trump is taking towards some of the challenges that you mentioned, Thomas and Abu Bakr mentioned in the region?
Well, I mean, the first step is for Trump to actually make statements or announcements about this region, to reiterate what's already been said. You know, I think that South Asia really did not figure prominently at all on the campaign trail. And certainly in Trump's own thinking, I think that Trump, much like Hillary Clinton and also like Barack Obama, for that matter, when he thinks about foreign policy priorities, he's thinking about the Middle East. He's thinking about Russia. Mm-hmm. He's thinking about China. He's not thinking about South Asia and not even Afghanistan, even though this is where the U.S. has been fighting its longest ever foreign war. So I think that what we need to look for is some type of announcement, some type of statement coming from the White House, or even from Trump before he settles in the White House, in which he says something about the region. Hmm. And I would like to think that if he's going to say something about South Asia, probably the subject of the first announcement would focus on India. I mean, I agree that there's been a lot of hype in the campaign, and he had clearly sought out the Indian American community, though he didn't really succeed, I don't think. And he's made quite clear that he's a big fan of India. So I think that'll be first. And I do think that Trump, if you look at the major bilateral relationships for the United States and South Asia, I think that for Trump, the one with India will be the one that he'll want to accord the most attention to. And I think that by extension, that will make it very difficult for him to try to build out something beyond a very workable relationship with Pakistan. I think that regardless of who the next president was going to be, the U.S.-Pakistan relationship was destined for a bit of a downgrade. And that's because there seems to be bipartisan support in Washington for pushing forward more with India. And I think, in Afghanistan, I like to hope that we hear something from Trump sometime soon about, how he hopes to proceed, at the very least, on the issue of troops. And I would imagine that the leadership in Afghanistan would be very keen to hear a message on that front as well, as would other leaders in Pakistan and in India. They I think they're just as curious as all of us as to what direction he wants to go in, because, as we've all said, we just don't know. And as analysts or as journalists, we need to be humble and just acknowledge that we really don't know where this guy is going with his foreign policy. He's such a wild card.
Right. Definitely, there's angle that you mentioned, Michael. I will go back to that. But before that, Abubakar, Michael also said U.S.-Pakistani relations distant to downgrade. So what the Pakistan is preparing for now?
Well, I think in all international relations, I think they are primarily driven by national interests. So regardless of who is in charge in Washington, he or she will have to, as the primary responsibility of looking after his national interest. And I think there is still one key national interest in South Asia, and particularly related to Pakistan, which is terrorism and security. Mm-hmm. And that is something that Trump has said. I think I think no American president planned anything about Afghanistan before 9/11, but that is what attracted them to what is now America's longest war. So in terms of Pakistan, again, the issue of security issues and terrorism, and also I think in the coming decades, Pakistan's close alliance with China will figure prominently. And just in Pakistan, I think there is a realization that Islamabad is not looking at United States as a strategic partner as it looks at China, but Islamabad is, I think, very keen both on the civilian leadership side and the military side to maintain some kind of transactional relationship. And then we can later on go into details of what that relationship will look like and where will be the points of convergence and where are the tensions and what can the two sides potentially do to address those tensions.
Afghanistan is interesting case, isn't it, Thomas? President-elect Trump barely mentioned this country, despite this is the longest war that U.S. Has ever fought. Why you think it was so?
Yeah, well, I think probably that as a result of the thinking which is there in the U.S. or has been there in the U.S. that actually we're on the way out of Afghanistan and would like to say goodbye to that country and that problem as soon as we can. But as we all know who deal with Afghanistan, Afghanistan has the tendency to put itself on the agenda, which it did under Obama, who actually wanted to end this war. So 3 points about what has been said and what you've been asking. First, I hope that the new president does not only get an AFPAC file, but that he gets an Afghanistan file and a Pakistan file, two of them, because not everything what's happening in Afghanistan, like National Unity Government, has anything to do with Pakistan. And also Pakistan has a lot of more problems than what just is connected with Afghanistan. It's big enough. But there are many other domestic issues which do not relate to Afghanistan. I want to mention also the problem of Balochistan here. Secondly, when I was looking for something, what Trump or people in this campaign have said about Afghanistan, I didn't find too much. There's a website with foreign policy missions of President-to-be Trump, which has the headline Foreign Policy and Defeating the Islamic State, or ISIS, as they call it. That's also one of the issues. I mean, if that means that the new U.S. administration will continue the drone war and try to tackle ISIS also in Afghanistan and Pakistan, it doesn't do anything on the ground, which we can conclude from what he said about his disinclination towards nation building and what I would call actually democracy building and state building in Afghanistan, then we will run into a cul-de-sac. I mean, that will not solve anything. And on the three countries we have been discussing, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, if that relatively close alliance which was there with Pakistan is now just replaced by one with India on the cost of Pakistan, that also will not bring anything in Afghanistan forward, because then we will get into a, probably into a larger polarization between India and Pakistan, which are very close to each other. Also after the disappointments of President Ashraf Ghani in Afghanistan about Pakistan's inability or unwillingness to bring in the Taliban into talks, cornering Pakistan would also not make much sense, although there's a lot to criticize about it.
The third factor, maybe Abu Bakr, you want to take this question. The third factor is the factor of militants. Trump is known with tough comments when it comes to dealing with insurgents. He spoke about killing family members of IS terrorists in the Middle East. How is this message resonated among the militants in both sides of the border, in Pakistan, in Afghanistan?
Well, I think the Taliban issued a statement, if I can remember, I mean, to last week, in which they kind of told President Trump what they've been saying all along, that to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan. But I think that, I mean, extremists, obviously, they will use some of his at least campaign rhetoric or these kind of very tough positions to justify or kind of project their own stand that, I mean, U.S. is essentially an occupying power in Afghanistan and such things. But there is also a chance that, I mean, given that Trump would like to see probably quick results. He will not, as Michael pointed out, he will not be very patient. That he would like to have results, and a lot of these again go back to what happens between Washington and Islamabad. I think we know from open sources and stuff that there is a lot of this. There have been a lot of disagreements in this alliance. And I think if there are incidents in Afghanistan or Pakistan, incidents such as big terrorist attacks, major attacks in Afghan cities or Indian cities or even in Pakistan, that will, of course, provoke, I think, a new attention on the militant problem in Pakistan. And Pakistan now has all of its neighbors, or nearly most of its neighbors, complaining from, and that also includes China, complaining about militant sanctuaries and this kind of distinction between good and bad terrorists in the Pakistani policy.
Abu Bakr, you also, Michael, questioned Trump's patience. In case of his message is not going through Pakistani leadership, do you think he might take measures like cutting off the aid that the United States is giving to Pakistan?
Well, I mean, I think there's a very good chance that Trump will be unwilling to provide aid without conditions to Pakistan. I mean, this is, and this has been something, sentiment that you're increasingly have seen with the Obama administration over the last few months. I mean, less of a patience for writing blank checks to Pakistan. So there have been a number of threats to cut certain types of aid. And certainly with Trump, I mean, he is, you know, if there's one thing that we know about him when it comes to foreign policy, and there's very little we know, if there's one thing we know, it seems to be that his emphasis is on America first. He does not want to get entangled in affairs overseas, and he does not want to be providing resources and committing to things overseas if U.S. interests are not served very prominently. So in that regard, I think that he will be very blunt and very candid that if, there's no clear evidence that, for example, the Pakistanis are not taking more robust actions against the Haqqani network, he could well try to come up with some sort of plan of action in which he seeks to cut off significant levels of military aid to Pakistan. And that would be a major shift, because the Obama administration, even though it had moved a bit closer to wanting to cut back aid, there had not been any threats to, or blanket threats to cut off aid completely. And I think that Trump, and clearly we don't know who's going to be in his administration yet, but I would assume that those, in high up in the Defense Department and the State Department, particularly the Defense Department, they probably are not going to want to go there. And that could be very troubling for the Pakistanis, because despite this emphasis in Pakistan on how they have other options, they could work more with the Chinese, with the Russians, etc., the military in Pakistan really values the assistance, the material support, and also the money that it gets from the United States. So I think there is a lot of concern and apprehension in Pakistan about what Trump could do conceivably down the road.
I think it.
And if I may add very quickly, I think during the past few years, there has been a kind of bipartisan consensus in Washington that Pakistan really needs to do more and come clear about its policy towards all kinds of extremist groups, militant groups operating out of its territory.
Yeah, I think it will also depend on how the Trump's team is shaping up here in Washington, D.C. And one thing we know from initial rumors here in D.C. is General Michael Flynn is among one of the top aides of the Trump camp. And when it comes to Pakistan and Afghanistan, Michael, is it what you are hearing?
Yeah, I mean, of course, all kinds of speculation. But, someone like Michael Flynn and, all of these other, a number of other names that have been mentioned as possible choices to serve in very high positions in the White House and the Defense Department in ways that would deal with Pakistan, none of these people have distinguished themselves as big fans of Pakistan, certainly not Michael Flynn. If we're talking about someone like Newt Gingrich becoming the Secretary of State, I assure you that Newt Gingrich does not have many soft corners for Pakistan. So that's why I think that even though we don't know yet who's going to be serving these key positions in the Trump administration, I imagine that Pakistan will not find that it has many friends in high places in the corridors of power in Washington.
Thank you, Michael. Yes, there are likely possibilities in the light of what we know and what was said during the campaign by the President-elect Trump. It is yet to be seen how and if these arguments or educated guesses are going to translate in reality. While Trump's policies remain uncertain on many of these issues, but we know the realities on the ground as it stands is serious. So based on that, let's talk a little bit about what should President Trump do to handle the challenges accordingly. Before getting into that aspect, let me recap with our panelists. Michael Kugelman, the senior South Asia fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center, is joining us from Washington, D.C. Thomas Rutik, co-founder of the Afghan Analysis Network, is with us today. He's usually in Kabul, but today he is in Berlin. Abubakar Siddiq, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, which focuses on Pakistan and Afghanistan, is with us from Prague. Abubakar is also author of a book called Pashtun Question. I'm Mohammed Tahir here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen, to the Gandhara podcast. So, yes, President-elect Trump's policies might be uncertain when it comes to Afghanistan and Pakistan, but what we know that people like General Michael Flynn, just Michael, you mentioned, is part of his inner circle, who is a veteran of Afghanistan. In the meantime, he is taking the office at a time when militants are on the rise in Afghanistan. Since Trump's victory made public, you have seen at least two spectacular attacks targeting directly Western interests in Afghanistan, such as the attack on German consulate in Mazar-e-Sharif, an attack on NATO base in Bagram. We will come to this aspect on what should Trump's policy look like. But first, let's talk about these two attacks. Are they, Thomas, just a coincidence or a deliberate message from the militants?
I don't think that they are a message to the new U.S. president. The message which Abu Bakr mentioned earlier was published on 9 November, so before the elections, and it was actually addressed, the Taliban message was addressed to the new president, whoever it may be. They used the word Wulus Mishir and avoided to say Mr. or Mrs. And so I see what's going on in Afghanistan, the more spectacular terrorist attacks like the two you mentioned, which usually reach our media, but much more the mainly underreported operations of the Taliban elsewhere in the country, which also have been escalating over the past months. And we just have new figures from Afghanistan compiled by the Kabul-based news agency Pajwak, saying that comparing October to September, we had some 35% increase of Taliban attacks countrywide, and we had around 80% increase of casualties, which shows this is an ongoing campaign. And I think the Taliban aren't really too much concerned about who is president in the U.S. They see the U.S., as it has been said, as an occupation force. They want them out, whoever is the president. Of course, they also think politically. I mean, it's not just people who are coming from the mountains and don't have any thoughts about that. They probably also have, they have very likely seen and heard the few things which have been said by Trump and some of his people about Afghanistan. And I think that might have created hopes in their eyes that if he is impatient, if he cuts the money, that will, of course, undermine the government in Kabul. And this is also not something I think any U.S. president, after the 15 years of investments in blood and money, can afford. So I hope there's some serious thinking on the U.S. side about this, but also about that it cannot be business as usual as before, because that has not really solved anything.
Let's talk a little bit about this Taliban angle or the militants angle of this, Abu Bakr. In the face of this surge by the militants in Afghanistan and Mr. Trump's tough talk on ISIS in the Middle East, what do you expect to see he's doing to handle this? For example, lately, President Obama was on board in peace talks with the Taliban. What effect Trump's election will have on U.S.'s strategy on how to deal with militants in Afghanistan?
Well, I think if his national security operators or advisors come from a very ideological background, it's possible that they will see all militants as one and essentially won't make the distinction between the Taliban, whose aims are limited to Afghanistan, and the ISIS or other similar groups who are, in a sense, transnational or international. But I think in Afghanistan, his administration will be informed by the past government track record and from intelligence briefing and stuff that will clearly tell him, the main obstacles to peace, for example. I think now there is a realization in both in Washington and also in the Western Journal that one way, or maybe the best way of ending the conflict in Afghanistan is some way of is pushing for reconciliation among all Afghans, and that also includes the Taliban. But at the same time, I think people will take a very hard look at the past 6, 7, 8 years. I mean, we know that reconciliation has been part of the American strategy towards Afghanistan since 2009, in that famous speech that Obama made in March, when he unveiled declared his new Afghanistan-Pakistan approach. But compared to the military effort, the troop numbers and other stuff, maybe it was not well resourced. And of course, it's a very complicated political process, very delicate process. We had a very senior American, former American diplomat leading the effort initially, but we have not seen the kind of results that I think many people in the international community and Afghanistan would have liked to see. But if, for example, his national security team is dominated by figures who have very strong ideological leanings, as was the case in among some of the figures in former President Bush's administration, then I think there is a possibility that Washington will veto this kind of reconciliation with the Taliban. And I just read somewhere today that Afghanistan is pushing for putting the current head of the Taliban on new UN sanctions list. And we know from the past few years that these sanction lists against Taliban leadership is a main hurdle in bringing them to the negotiating table.
How to deal with militants is a big question. If you ask Afghan officials, the answer to possible future approach to Taliban or how to defeat them will be to tackle the problem in its source, which they say is in Pakistan. Michael, what is Trump's options to handle this in the source, as the Afghans call?
Well, I mean, of course, there's only so much that any U.S. president can do about these militant sanctuaries in the Pakistani tribal areas. And as we all know, I mean, the Pakistani army has staged very heavy counterterrorism operations in North Waziristan over the last 2 years, though they did not target the types of militant groups that tend to attack Afghanistan. I mean, these were essentially Pakistani Taliban and militant groups that turn their guns on Pakistan. And in fact, I mean, you could argue that you've had a worsening of the situation, that, you know, once this Pakistani counterterrorism operation began in North Waziristan, it really pushed a lot of militants into Afghanistan, including Afghan Taliban and Haqqani Network and so forth. You know, I think that it's really hard to know what direction he can go in. And I do think that the big question is what to do about the Taliban, the Afghan Taliban. And, you know, as we've noted, you know, peace talks has been the plan A, B, and C for the Obama administration. It understands that, you know, there's no military solution to this war in Afghanistan, and you need talks. But I've always been a cynic. I think that so long as the Taliban continues to enjoy battlefield successes, it really will have no incentive to sit down at the table. And so for Trump, I think a big question is, you know, instead of trying to continue that policy of looking to talks, might he want to consider essentially doing something that the Obama administration did as a one-off, but take it much further? And that is this idea of extending the drone war into Balochistan and trying to target Afghan Taliban leaders that use that area as a sanctuary. The Obama administration drone Mullah Mansour earlier this year, and Obama said that it would only be a one-off. Could Trump decide that since it's futile to have a peace process, that you should then essentially just try to go after Afghan Taliban leaders on Pakistani soil in Balochistan? Now, of course, that could cause other problems. It could cause other tensions. But I imagine that Trump and, or more realistically, his advisors, people that are going to be thinking about this region, they may start to think about that idea. It's a possibility.
Imagine you are among the Trump's team on Pakistan or Afghanistan. Would you suggest Trump be taking that direction?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, certainly there would be certain short-term political achievements there, in the sense that if you show that you're taking matters into your own hands and you're going after, you know, the source of the insurgency in Afghanistan, that could play well in Afghanistan. It could play well in the U.S. It would be a different story in Pakistan. But at the end of the day, that wouldn't solve the problem. It wouldn't solve the root drivers of the insurgency. It wouldn't solve the problem that of this continued Pakistani security establishment support for a lot of these Taliban militants and their Haqqani Network allies. You know, it wouldn't do anything about the fact that you have a government in Afghanistan that continues to be seen as corrupt and ineffective and not in a position to deal with the insurgency on its soil. So I think that for the U.S., if we were to talk about what Trump should do, I think it's a combination of things. One is to, first of all, keep troops in the country. I do not think that withdrawing all U.S. troops would be a particularly good idea. And I say that not just because it's important to have them there for the sake of psychological support and reassurance to the Afghans, but also, you know, let's face it, given how troubling the security situation is in Afghanistan, if Trump were to pull all troops out of Afghanistan at a certain point, it could conceivably set in motion a series of events that could really cause the security situation to deteriorate and conceivably allow the likes of Al-Qaeda to once again establish safe havens in Afghanistan. It could establish could allow for what is currently simply a very fledgling presence of ISIS or Daesh or Daesh-aligned troops. It could allow for a situation where the U.S. looks at a situation in Afghanistan where you have direct threats to the United States, Al-Qaeda and Daesh, using Afghan soil as a potential staging ground for attacks, which would essentially put the U.S. in the very situation that it went in 2001 to deal with. And that's, I think that's why there needs to be an effort on the part of Trump to see Afghanistan for what it is, in the sense that if you keep troops there, hopefully it could promote a modicum of stability to make less likely the possibility that Afghanistan could once again become a staging ground for attacks, international attacks, including conceivably on the United States.
Thank you, Michael. We could talk about even where more pressure on Pakistan could lead Islamabad to. I mean, there are lots of other topics we could touch, but unfortunately we have to end our discussion. But final points, Abu Bakr and Thomas, to you. If you were to be advisor to Trump, Abu Bakr, what would be your suggestion to him going forward?
Well, I think in terms of South Asia overall, particularly in Afghanistan, Pakistan, I think the big question to me is, I mean, my own experience working in the two countries coming from there is that the main question is whether the new administration will be able to either pressure Pakistan or in a way persuade Pakistan to give up its support for militant groups. I think that will do a lot in terms of diffusing tension, in terms of improving relationships not only between Pakistan and Afghanistan, but Pakistan and India. And I think it will also be something that has already the support of China, Russia, I think much of the international, Europe, definitely, and much of the international community. So I hope that the debate in Washington doesn't revolve again around the U.S. troop numbers, because in the sense, if you look at from the perspective on ground, what is happening in Afghanistan, Pakistan today, this is the question that has to be, that needs to be addressed, and that quite frankly, the intervention since 9/11 have failed to address.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, the same question to you.
I hope that it does not happen what has been discussed earlier, that there will be an escalation of the drone war and other aspects of the war, as that can only be, let's call it, the second tier in looking for a solution in Afghanistan, if we do not want to have an endless commitment by the U.S. and the rest of the world in Afghanistan. I think I'm a little bit skeptical about that, because if impatience comes together with a trend of using anti-Muslim rhetorics, that will neither go down well in Pakistan nor in Afghanistan, if we talk about the Taliban side there, but also about the general population in Afghanistan. There's also the danger that after the failure, which was rushed in my eyes, to go through Islamabad to talk with the Taliban, has led to a tendency in the Afghan government, but also in public, in publicized public opinion in Afghanistan, pushing for a military solution. If these two things go hand in hand, I think the danger for the region will be bigger. And I can only hope, although I am not optimistic, that a political solution will be tried, including the Taliban, and that needs at least a toning down of the anti-Muslim rhetoric we have heard during large parts of the campaign. And also not seeing Afghanistan only as a military problem, but also as a political problem, with the current government not delivering on in many fields to their own population, and actually covering that also by militant rhetoric of military solution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, Thomas. So what we discussed today is, you know, a likely possibilities, or at least a best educated guesses, no guarantee that things will end up going into this direction. Thank you very much for being part of the first Gandhara podcast today, Michael Kugelman, the senior South Asia fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., Thomas Rutik, co-founder of Afghan Analysis Network, Abu Bakr Siddiq, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. Once again, thank you very much for joining our Gandhara podcast, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.